It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests. Bow your heads the Lord's
mention. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Bauer and Pollock. Why is it special? Because it's Bauer and Pollock, and whenever we pop up, it's a special occasion. What is going on, Court?
It's special because we're actually recording this time.
This is take one.
Take one of one, hopefully.
And if you can hear based on my voice, I think I've only got one take in me today.
Yeah, you're suffering from that Canadian whooping cough right now. It's pretty nasty, but how you doing?
Well, I'm going to be giving my mute button a workout today, so I will try and spare the listener my cough that I've got. I've been very sick this week. As if you've listened to any of our shows this week, you have seen the progression from a bad throat on Monday's show to a cold on Wednesday, and now it's moved. Do you have the same where it goes through all different areas of your throat and up, and the last step is the cough, and the cough is always the hardest to kick. So I'm hoping by the weekend that I am completely recovered. So that's my goal this week, Cord.
I have a sneaking suspicion you got this from Wei Ting.
You've always made that joke whenever I get sick. I don't know what it is with you.
He's like the Ebola virus.
Well, he will get sick every now and then. But, you know, considering all the amount of shows I do with him where we are in an enclosed space, it's amazing how often I get sick that he is not sick. So he's kind of immune from whatever virus I'm spreading out to the world. So that's good.
Well,
he's like an X-Man.
I guess. What are kind of X-Men? What are his superpowers?
He's Wei Ting. He's got numerous superpowers. Most in editing skills.
Well, that is a superpower unto itself. But lots going on in wrestling since we last did the show in late August. As we had talked about in the past, Ronda Rousey and WWE, it seems like it is looming and it will be going down very soon. What do you think is the framework of a deal between Ronda Rousey and the WWE? Money, terms, length, what do you think? Pure speculation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of speculation now because I think many people were taken aback by the fact that Ronda was there on Tuesday, but very little done with her outside of your cutaways to her, having that presence that Ronda Rousey is there and got a big reaction from the audience in Las Vegas, or should I say Sin City, as the WWE identified their location on Tuesday night throughout the show.
They rebranded it.
Yeah, they love to do that. At least it was a step up from the week prior where they were in Sioux Falls and didn't mention the city once on television.
Yeah, goddamn. City's not big enough. We go with the state.
Yeah, there was like no location. They didn't even have like a catchy nickname for Sioux Falls. It was just, welcome to the show, folks. Nothing. There was nothing to tip your hat to beautiful Sioux Falls, South Dakota, the home of Shayna Baszler. But nonetheless, Ronda Rousey there on Tuesday, no angle shot. It makes me wonder if a deal is even set at this point with Ronda Rousey. She was interviewed by a number of outlets on Tuesday and wouldn't talk at all about her involvement. I mean, we know she's training. We know that this is probably a formality of just putting pen to paper and getting the terms in place, because this would be a very unique deal, Court, in that Ronda Rousey is not coming in to be a full-time everyday performer. It would probably be structured much closer to something like Bill Goldberg's deal, where it would have an end date in mind and probably mix in 2 to 3 matches. Mm-hmm. I would guess that would be what you would be aiming for with Rousey, to maybe have a Survivor Series show, maybe something to set up your Mania angle and the Mania match, and then after that, we'll see where things go.
That sounds about right, and I think I personally was thinking, you look at this No Mercy card, and it is a hell of a No Mercy card. I mean, L.A., you're getting a hell of a show, and if you subscribe to the network, you're getting a great show. Big marquee matches. And maybe think, well, if they're doing this now, what do they have planned just around the corner for WrestleMania in New Orleans? And I went right to, well, Ronda Rousey. Could we see at WrestleMania in New Orleans the first women's main event of a WrestleMania? And you could put her against Charlotte. I could also see some folks in Titan Towers pushing for Stephanie versus Ronda, or a tag team of Triple H and Ronda, or Triple H and Stephanie versus Ronda and The Rock. All very big matches. You can debate which one is your preference, but I think that'd be kind of cool to have the first women's main event for WrestleMania. Now, you can also get into, well, would it close out or just be one of the three or two main events they typically do for WrestleMania? I'd love to see it close out a show. I think Charlotte could carry her to a great match. I think there's some other women that could carry her to a great match. We'll see where they go, if they go there. The first match, I think, would be, theoretically, I would imagine they do it Survivor Series. They've been pumping up the Survivor Series the last few years, as you recall last year's Survivor Series. So they're trying to reestablish it as a big core four show. And having Ronda's pro wrestling debut at Survivor Series is a huge attraction. And then to take it to maybe an angle at the Rumble or a match, I'd probably say they'd go with an angle. And then maybe a match at WrestleMania feels like the kind of like a ballpark idea of what they could do. The price attached to bringing Ronda Rousey in, that's an interesting question. I say you could maybe she gets $500,000 a match. You can say maybe she gets more. We don't know. We may never know. But it's an interesting time to see them really stack up No Mercy, and with Ronda now looming, I'm very curious to see how that works. But I think it's a great opportunity for Shayna, who's coming off of the Mae Young Classic and is a non-traditional type of talent for Vince to get behind. But I think she has a fighting chance because of Ronda's involvement to get a spotlight. Maybe too much too soon when you think about where she is in the business. She's very talented. I think she has a lot of upside, but she's still fairly green.
Yeah, and I'm curious what you think here, because, you know, you've been in that environment working next to Vince McMahon. Is that Shayna Baszler on the MMA four horsewoman mm-hmm. side of things, that's the veteran of the bunch. When you're looking at the experience level of Ronda Rousey, of Jessamyn Duke, of Marina Shafir, that you're putting into such a high profile match, I mean, is there trepidation, do you feel, on that side, that as big of a marquee as Ronda Rousey wrestling on a pay-per-view is, that structuring this match becomes very difficult for the agents involved? You have to be very creative with some very limited performers. And also the Vince McMahon side of things, who I guarantee you, outside of Ronda Rousey, hadn't heard of any of these women beforehand. And I'm sure he was late to the game on understanding what Ronda Rousey meant to sports and to mixed martial arts, that one of his marquee events, putting all of these women into such a huge match with four of his own women.
Well, Vince is, I mean, he's stubborn, but he's not stupid. And when you have people like The Rock advocating for her, putting her over, when you see the stack of media she gets or has received over the last two or three years, not just in sports, but in the entertainment trade papers, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, stuff Vince tracks, to see her endorsement deals, to see her popping up where she's popped up. Vince is going to see that. She's on the radar for sure. Does he appreciate the same as maybe someone else? That's debatable. I think this match, if they do a Survivor Series 4-on-4 match, would probably be a lot of stalling and building up to simple spots. And maybe it breaks down and you get a no contest. You know, I don't know how they get out of that match, because the WWE mentality of, well, they're outsiders. Do we want to beat our girls against those guys? You know, there's going to be all types of discussions like that. So it's hard to know where they're going to go with that Survivor Series. A non-finish is a lazy finish, but sometimes maybe the right finish. It depends how they get there.
The fact no angle was shot on Tuesday, on top of the fact that if that was your Survivor Series direction, you know, you could argue that This was very much an angle that was shot in the Mae Young Classic. It was not, quote unquote, a WWE angle that they shot, that by not having Sasha there, not even having Marina Shafir there, that we there may be some hiccups on the road to getting this angle shot. And when would you ideally want this done if Survivor Series is your target? Is the Staples Center a viable... Because I think that you would want to do this on television. I wouldn't necessarily want to do such a big angle just for the network and get it to the broadest audience possible.
Well, there's so many steps when you're doing a promotional build, and you want to enrich your WWE network and its exclusive programming. So having something like that as a hook to trigger it is okay, because you can replay and say, get the network to watch, and then they recap and replay to death, so you'll get that on TV. Then you can have the actual challenge be on TV and really pump that up, the first confrontation or the contract signing or the typical WWE tropes. They can stretch this out. They got a lot of time. I think LA is a good option for it, because it's, well, Ronda's back, that's where she lives, she's back there. So it would be an interesting, I mean, listen, the card's already big and has a lot of buzz. You could also say putting it on that show is the wrong placement, because there's too much on it. So is it going to get lost with all these big matches? Well, maybe, maybe not. Depends on what you shine a light on Monday Night Raw the most. But it seems like within the next 30 days we'll know where Ronda's going. But she certainly is popping up a lot more in sports entertainment than she is in mixed martial arts. What do you think is her long-term relationship with the UFC?
I think it's an interesting one. I think everyone... no one's holding their breath for a return to mixed martial arts. However, I find it curious that, there's been nothing to suggest that she has withdrawn herself from the USADA testing pool. And I find that interesting, because that's a massive inconvenience to these fighters, that it's part of the job. It's part of what you accept by fighting for the UFC, that you are at the beck and call of USADA 24 hours a day, getting knocks on your door at 6 in the morning, that if you are not working towards a fight, that if this is not what you are dedicating everything to, why have that inconvenience in your life? And that was part of the reason Brock Lesnar took himself out of the USADA testing pool, was the fact that he was not getting ready for a fight, so he took himself away from that. So if Ronda is still being subjected to USADA, that would tell me that the idea of her fighting again is not completely vanquished. I think her focus is pro wrestling at the moment, but I think that's an intriguing part. And USADA is, because I've spoken to them about this, and they are not going to release information about who is in or out of the testing pool. They leave that upon the fighter and the UFC to disclose that information, and they're going to be very tight-lipped about that. But that, I think, would tell you a lot about Ronda's desire to fight again. Given how, I mean, Ronda has a very, very private stance now on mixed martial arts. I mean, it's not really a secret. When she goes out and does interviews, part of the, for most interviews, if not all of them now, is she does not want to be asked questions about mixed martial arts. That's how closed off she has become, unless it's in some controlled environment that she's out there to speak about mixed martial arts. So it's a subject to her that, I don't know, it's very strange. I don't think we've ever seen a mixed martial artist, at least, respond to a loss, or in this case, a pair of losses, in the way that Ronda Rousey has, where it has been significant in how she has dealt with these losses, and just has, you almost, like, it sounds ridiculous, but almost traumatized from these losses to Holly Holm and Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, I think it's just, for someone that competitive to be wired the way they are, it's very challenging to kind of address it or confront it, or have to, maybe she's confronted it privately, but to just go through it and rehash it, it just doesn't, she doesn't have an appetite for it. I get that,
And there's a pattern there, Court. When she won bronze at the Olympics in 2008, it was, she viewed it as this failure, not winning gold, and her reaction was, I'm never doing judo again. And she left that sport, became a bartender, and then found fighting after that. It was something where, I mean, this is an ultra competitive woman at the highest level of the respective sports she's been a part of in her life. And losses are not an easy pill to swallow for this woman. That's been evident throughout her career in both judo and in mixed martial arts.
If she were to get more immersed with WWE in a hypothetical situation, she signs a Brock Lesnar contract and appears for 2 years for multiple dates, X, Y, and Z. I wonder, because it's not all a cakewalk, even for the high-end contracts. At certain points, it gets to be challenging for various reasons, as we've all seen over the years. I wonder how she would take on those challenges and issues, given how she is wired.
Like the political side of
the political side, the bullshit side, all that. What would she, you know? All of a sudden, you look how they booked some, like Sasha Banks as an example. I don't think they would ever put her in that position, but if they presented her lesser than in any capacity, how does Ronda Rousey take to that?
Who she aligns herself as well in terms of, this is someone who's coming in as a super fan. She's a massive pro wrestling fan, and there is no – I don't think that's an act at all. I think this woman is a legitimate, huge pro wrestling fan, but now you're coming in and you're going to see how the sausage is made, and that can make – anyone somewhat jaded to the process that they go through. And you have to imagine that the WWE is looking at this as something of capitalizing on Ronda Rousey and ultimately putting that spotlight on their performers, on themselves. And I would imagine that they would be building to something where they are gaining something out of it, and Ronda being placed into that situation where she's going to have to learn this game really fast if she's going to excel at it beyond just your one-and-done WrestleMania match and then we go our separate ways. If she's looking at this for something extended like a Brock deal, you're right. She's going to have to understand this industry really quickly, because it's going to be beyond just the novelty of Ronda Rousey wrestling a match. It's going to be preserving that attraction that she is going to need to become to sustain that visibility.
It's actually too bad that Rowdy Piper's not here, because I know she was a huge fan of his, and his advice, I mean, he was pretty aggressive and very strong about how he was presented, and really made it challenging for Vince, and rightfully so. He had to be his own advocate, but I bet he could have taught her a lot about, you know, how you position yourself with these people. She needs someone in her corner. Brock has Paul Heyman. She needs her own advocate. She really does. And that's not to say they're going to abuse her, but there's always going to be challenges. And maybe it'll be like Goldberg, where it was just a wonderful, quick little piece of business, and they get out, and everyone feels good about each other, and life goes on. It's possible, for sure. I don't want to be a skeptic or jaded about it, but you know, you just don't know. Especially in wrestling, you never know. There are no guarantees in wrestling.
Let's chat about a big incident on Tuesday night's episode from Sin City, and that was the angle involving Kevin Owens. Before we discuss the headbutt, what did you just think of the overall booking? Like, Kevin Owens was the star of the show. He was the thread throughout numerous segments of the show, beginning, middle, and end. I thought that Kevin Owens, at the end of it, felt like the biggest star on SmackDown.
Well, the thing about Kevin Owens is he can do it all. He can go in the ring. He can talk. He can do serious. He can do ha-ha. He is very versatile. And so you can build a two-hour show around him regularly. And that's what WWE is all about this fall. They're going to turn it into essentially a Kevin Owens show. He's really had a great year when you look at the work he did with Jericho and how he transitioned over the summer and then into this role with Shane McMahon. It's phenomenal. The first thought I had when I saw the Vince McMahon angle, we can get into the debate about the headbutt seen, heard, felt around the world. But first, the thought I had was, wow, that's a strong angle for right now in September. And I'm thinking, well, where are they going? Because, man, this is the kind of stuff I'd like to see on the road to WrestleMania. You get Vince involved very limited basis. And you have to be so careful. Okay, if you're going to use it on Kevin Owens, what are you doing? Where are you going? Instantly, I thought, well, this thing is – they're hot-shotting this for one reason. Next month, SmackDown has Hell in a Cell. And it's got to be Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens in that thing. And that's why they've put so much heat on this. Got to be.
Oh, and that's it. I mean, they're doing the Hell in a Cell match. But when you look at the No Mercy card, when you look at what they're doing at Hell in a Cell with that angle, you're right. Like, this is all... this is WrestleMania programs that you could be doing. Like, if you were to tell me next year that they were doing Brock and Braun with keeping Braun a monster throughout the rest of this year and into next, maybe even winning the Rumble, Reigns and Cena for the first time ever, a big heated Shane McMahon angle with possibly control of SmackDown on the line with Kevin Owens, doing a Vince McMahon blood angle going into it, the talk of Ronda Rousey, like all this stuff. Could be your WrestleMania card, which is going to somewhat, I guess, up the anticipation of your audience of what you do have saved for WrestleMania. What cards do you have to play next year when you're getting set for WrestleMania when you have put so much out there? Even the idea of putting matches on free television like Nakamura and John Cena, John Cena and Braun Strowman, that it's stuff you can rehash down the road. But that first time ever, there is a certain specialness to that, that WrestleMania, it would be an attractive stage for, that they are throwing a lot on the table this fall, when typically numbers are down when football is back.
Well, yeah, and like I said, they had to go there with that Shane McMahon match. When they made it, I'm thinking, here's the problem. They slot Hell in a Cell to be every year in October. So if things don't organically get there with how you book it, you're hot-shotting, and that's what they did. And I'm like, man, oh, man, I don't know when this match should have taken place, but we went from 0 to 60 very quickly. Maybe it should have been in November. Maybe it should have been in December. But it feels so premature to do it in October, and to have Vince come out right now and do this now felt premature. And then to make the match already felt premature. But they're hot-shotting to get that booked for Hell in a Cell next month out in Detroit. It is what it is as a match. I just think the pacing was a little weird to do it so early. And again, anytime you use Vince, and you can get into the physicality in a moment, but anytime you use Vince, it's like one of those magic bullets that it's 9 out of 10 times it's going to get over. As he gets older, he'll probably lose some of his impact. But still... when and where, so important when you book. Just because it looks good on paper, when and where, so important when you can draw the big money. I think this one is just too premature, but who's to say that by October 8th, which is less than a month away, that this is going to be a big time match. But it's also going to be interesting because you have Nakamura with Mahal for the title at that show. I got to think that Shane match goes on last, and I hate having a title match not go on last. And maybe I'm just old school.
But there's no question what the number one program is on SmackDown.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no doubt about it. You watch SmackDown, and the title, you know, gender was the focus over the summer for sure. And it seems like now they're going with this. And it's a big match. I get why, how the McMahons would justify that. But... it's just weird. It's just a weird positioning for gender. And I honestly do feel at this point in time, I was originally thinking you get to maybe WrestleMania with him, but just the lack of opponents he would have to get there, and what's the match at WrestleMania? Who's chasing him for the belt? That's my big issue, because you went through Orton, now you're going through Nakamura. What's next? I mean, go AJ, but it's very challenging. I think they're going to switch the title soon. They've been switching a lot of titles. I think they'll switch the title soon, though.
The one that they have been consistent with has been the WWE title. But it's asking yourself, who is our audience for the WWE Network? To me, it is your wrestling fans. That what is the big match you're building to? What is your Jinder Mahal dream match? I can't really name one on SmackDown. The big matches you're getting are all of these setup matches. Orton and Nakamura, Cena and Nakamura. I mean, all these matches that, to me, feel like they could be your title program matches, they're the setup matches. And with Jinder Mahal, you know, I understand their need to do this, but I have always been of the belief the title should be on the top guy on the show. And the top guy, to me, at the moment, is no question Kevin Owens.
He is, and like I said, he's just very versatile. And the other thing you look at him from wrestling operations point of view is he has had all these injuries. He's very durable. And there's a Canadian play there that I really still feel they have not hit on that they can make a ton of money with.
You've always brought this up about the fact of building that Canadian market. And, you know, Owens, to me, that to me is like Quebec is a massive market in Canada. And when Kevin Owens comes home, like, he gets big press in Montreal when they're doing Bell Center shows. Like, he will get on mainstream outlets. And to me, he's someone very versatile because of that, that he's not just an English-speaking ambassador for your company. He's a French-speaking one. And that's a pretty coveted market in Canada where he can be – he's someone that it's transferable from – an Anglophone and a Francophone audience up here in Canada.
You're a Francophone.
Well, not according to my grades. French was not my strongest subject, but it was required in high school.
Well, with that, what did you think of the headbutt on Tuesday SmackDown?
Insanity. I couldn't believe what I was watching. The fact that this happened. Not so much that Vince McMahon would be willing to take a full-on headbutt from Kevin Owens, but the fact that no one said, Vince, you're out of your mind. We cannot do this. It's crazy to me that this made its way onto television. Like, I just thought it was so reckless to do this angle. Just over a year removed from when we did the Brock Lesnar-Randy Orton finish at SummerSlam. Like, what a way to just open yourselves up. When you see a company that is so conservative when it comes to the idea of clearing Daniel Bryan, that they would put – forget Vince McMahon, that they would put one of their own performers in a significant risk scenario that Kevin Owens was delivering this headbutt, much less what Randy Orton took from Brock Lesnar. I just think it's like what a short-sighted move for what could be potentially damaging down the road.
It's a weird thing. I mean, Vince will always say, yeah, I'll sign up for it. If I don't sign up for it, then I can't ask you to sign up for it. But, yeah, it was a very surprising spot that they would do that. And man, of all the ways to get color, that is the most high risk for danger you could have. You know, you look at the blade, you look at all the other options. And it's weird how they've regressed to doing hard ways to get color. And the world we live in, to get hard ways doing color, I mean, you're risking a lot more than just scar tissue, like with a blade. I don't know why they've gone in that weird hard way role. I mean, it's something that you'd feel like WWE's been very proactive with safety and stuff. Yet clearly they're you can see there's hard ways. I don't see hard ways in wrestling anymore except for WWE, which seems so bizarre. Yet that's where we're seeing the hard ways.
How do you ever find a guy that blades in a future match?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
without the biggest hypocrisy label placed upon whoever is giving out that order.
I mean, what kind of impact does that have on your locker room? You see the old man doing the angle, and everyone's like, yeah, of course, you know, they're going to allow to get color with him and doing hard work. You know, all this stuff that, I mean, there's a lot of skepticism when you see that. And it's like, well, you also know there's a double standard there. There's always going to be a double standard. The boss, every company, the boss is the boss, and there's going to be a double standard. But that's it's the message you're sending to the locker room. Is this okay? Do you want that to be okay?
Maybe Dave Bautista could send him the little wink emoji about that $100,000 fine he had to cough up a few years ago.
Yeah, it's weird how that works too. And there's been selective fining. And I don't know what was going on with them, but they wanted to make Bautista stay a weird one. And congratulations, guys. You estranged a top star now that's going to be in Blade Runner in a few weeks, which is tracking at over a $40 million opening weekend with Harrison Ford in it as well. So that would have been a nice rub for you guys. Guess you didn't know if it would be a success.
There will come a day when they are going to need Dave Bautista for the Hall of Fame or for some idea, and I hope Dave Bautista milks them for everything they can pay and then 10% more.
Yeah, I mean, and Dave loves the business, so it's like it's a shitty position to be in when that happens, and no one wants to be in that position when you have a passion for the business. He'd love to be. He's spoken now. He's done podcasts for me talking about it, and you know the guy wants to be somehow have some sort of connection to wrestling. And there's WWE, and then there's nothing really else. He's not going to go anywhere else for financial reasons, but also because of promotional reasons. Where are you going to put yourself? And also positioning as a big star. So it's like an all-or-nothing proposition for him. And so it's unfortunate. Nothing's forever. But for the immediate future, it seems like WWE's going to lose out more than Dave. Dave gets all the media and press he could ever want. And he's doing great roles, making tons of money. So he's not hurting in any way, shape, or form. They could, of course, always use that shot in the arm for star power. And listen, having Ronda is great. Having the ability to do these stunt promotions are great. Having a Goldberg is great. Eventually, you're going to look at that list. And you're going to want Dave Bautista. And, the relationship isn't all – we shouldn't over-exaggerate the state of the relationship. It's not overly strained. It's just – strange, I guess, is the best way to put it. He's in the new WWE video game. You know, he signed off on it. They signed off on it. 2K did it then. So it's not like we should make it out to be that there's this it's not like your CM Punk type of situation. That is the worst case scenario, probably, is to have that kind of relationship. Anything new on that, by the way? Because we talked about it in the last podcast. I think it's been kind of quiet since.
No, but we actually have Colt Cabana, who will be on The Law this Sunday night, and... yeah, is asked about it, and very little movement in terms of the lawsuit. It's still ongoing, and yeah, I guess it wasn't lost as well in the fact that Vince McMahon in the promo, I mean, there were people that, you know, noted the comparisons there of Vince McMahon threatening to just let Kevin Owens to just bleed him dry financially if he were to file a suit, and whether that was a wink at the ongoing plight for CM Punk and Colt Cabana over this whole thing, which is ongoing. And that podcast happened almost 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's – I wonder what the numbers were for that podcast. I'm sure they still are getting downloads for it. But what did you think of Enzo Amore and the Miz promo, having been at WWE and hearing the precise lines used by the Miz towards Enzo? It was a slaughtering from the back on Enzo Amore, to me.
Well, first of all, in terms of just delivering a promo, I thought The Miz was awesome. I thought it was a fantastically delivered promo. Now, the repercussions of this promo, if you are in the mindset that you are turning Enzo, great. But I don't necessarily understand if you are turning Enzo and fighting what has been a pretty organic babyface that has come up through NXT and the WWE that they have genuinely got behind, which the WWE's track record of flourishing babyfaces has not been stellar the last few years, that I wouldn't be trying to extinguish a pretty thriving babyface that Enzo was, because this was a segment designed to just tear this guy apart. It's one of those promos that if you are a fan of Enzo, I mean, how do you get behind this guy? It's much like rooting for Bayley in her hometown and she fails. It's much like Sasha Banks and a whole episode built around her inability to defend her title. And then when push comes to shove, she fails again to defend her title. It becomes very hard to root for a babyface when this company tells you, what a loser.
You could see a little bit on his face when Miz was just hitting that promo. He was selling.
And Miz was selling. Like, believe me, he was fantastic at delivering that. Like, that guy is a super effective promo, but this certainly felt like a promo for the locker room rather than your 3 million people watching.
I know it when I see it, and that was one of them. I've seen it before, and that was one of them. I'm wondering where Enzo Amore is in 2 to 3 years. I don't know if I see him in WWE at that point. I don't know if I see him in wrestling at that point. I don't know. This is a very critical time in his career. If you're a fan of Enzo Amore, looking at this guy, I don't know where he's going to be. I could see him easily doing stuff in music in 2 to 3 years.
He feels a lot like where the original Sin Cara was a number of years ago, a guy that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but sold a lot of merchandise and got pretty much a number of chances. And Enzo's in that same position. And unlike a lot of performers on that roster that you could say, hey, sometimes the grass is greener outside, with Enzo, those options are not out there beyond WWE. This is not a guy that is going to just do this incredible run on the indie scene that's going to jump over to Japan. I mean, the WWE is the best platform for Enzo.
Oh, he's custom made for it. When it comes to wrestling, yeah, it's WWE. Well, for most, I'd say 98% of the pro wrestling world, it's WWE or nothing. Does he have the viability to make it in music? I've heard his stuff. I personally have heard his stuff. He's pretty good. I mean, he totally sounds different than what you'd think from WWE stuff. It's different. It's a different gig. He has some very influential friends that could possibly open those doors. But still, that doesn't guarantee success. It's unknown.
He also wouldn't be able to market himself as Enzo Amore.
Yeah, he would not be able to use that name. And I'm even wondering what you would do when it comes to such a distinct likeness that was created in WWE. What, if anything, they would do to try to suppress him using that persona in terms of the hair, the gear, the look. They could possibly get him for that too. You know, it's like he has a very distinct look. You know, it's not like John Cena. You know, just take, if he were to leave WWE, I don't know how much they'd really come after him, even if they had a real strained relationship, and try to change his look. I mean, it's pretty, you know, his hair is his hair. I mean, but look at Scott Hall and Razor Ramon, and how they try to take a lot of that and strip it down when he went to WCW, and there was litigation over that. Who's to say? But it's a pivotal moment in his career, and he's right now, he's kind of like an island onto his own, it would seem. So it's just been, what, 18 months since he came up on the main roster. It's pretty shocking to see him go from the guy that was like the hottest act in April of May of 2016 to where he is in the fall of 2017. Very short period of time. That's wrestling. That's WWE, I guess.
Yeah, but he's someone that, I mean, you look at him, this guy, he does have that star quality that few guys have. I'm not saying necessarily, like we talked about this on the last show, not so much as an in-ring performer, but whether it be down the road as a manager, whether it be a heel manager, like there's so much potential with this guy. Tremendous, tremendous promo. That you hope that they can, that this works itself out, because it just feels like each week on Raw, it's the goal of the announcers of the segments to just, it's so counterproductive to this guy that is being pushed as a babyface on 205 Live. And it's a very strange juxtaposition when you see a segment like this past Monday with The Miz, where it was totally counter to business of this guy who at the end of this segment is the guy challenging Neville for the cruiserweight title at your next pay-per-view, and felt like such a loser.
Yeah, it's weird too when a heel speaks the truth to a babyface. That can really be crippling to the babyface. And that's, we've seen a lot of babyfaces crippled in WWE because of how they present them instead of trying to protect them. And sometimes you can say the priorities are a little out of whack. But, for the WWE roster, at least they got, after doing TV, got to go to Hawaii this week, which, if you're going to make towns, making Hawaii is a hell of a place to make.
Yeah, and featuring UFC featherweight champion Max Holloway attending the show.
There you go. I mean, I don't think they do enough shows in Hawaii. I'd love to see a pay-per-view in Hawaii or a Monday Night Raw in Hawaii and kind of have that themed out. I know it's a logistical nightmare to do it, but man, I mean, you have production resources. You can do I think you could get away with a WWE Network special there because they have production resources you can outsource from just in Hawaii. You wouldn't have to bring the whole WWE machine there, but just like they did when they went to Tokyo, just to strip down production, I think they could get away with it for a network special. It'd be pretty fucking cool.
Well, and unlike, doing a show from the UK on pay-per-view where they are ahead of us. I mean, Hawaii is 6 hours behind. So you could easily do an afternoon show in Hawaii that airs in the regular pay-per-view time slot for the U.S. and Canada as well. Wouldn't be the timing of it would be fine. You could air it live without any problem.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it would be a cool, different thing to do because, again, when Vince doesn't want to shine a light on a certain city in Iowa okay, how does Hawaii not a cool first-time-ever kind of experience? I think it would be, especially with them trying to do different programming and original programming always seemingly doing well when it comes to in-ring content for them, why not try a Hawaii show? I mean, you might be able to get Rock to come out because of his roots to Hawaii and have some sort of acknowledgement of maybe the Maivia family or something. I mean, there's a whole way that you can make this thing feel special and different. And that's what I love about the WWE Network when they do that kind of stuff. The Beast Goes East or whatever the hell the show was called a few years ago. But while I guess in Hawaii, I heard Kofi tweaked his knee a bit, so we have possibly another New Day member that's limping along here.
Yeah, they're going to need a replacement then for Big E to team with. Moving on, Global Force Wrestling. At the time we are doing this show, the Global Wrestling Network has not launched yet. It was set to go live this week. Well, I guess it did temporarily go live. You caught this?
I heard about it. And yeah, it was. Listen, it's very interesting what they're trying to do. I don't know how viable it will be on its own, given that I don't know how much value there is or an appetite there is for the WWE, or I should say the TNA Global Force product going back. I mean, there's some great matches with Kurt and Samoa Joe. You have that great classic three-way with AJ and Joe and Daniels, I think, from way back in the day. There's some good matches. You have Sting in there. I mean, maybe there's a way to sell it. I don't know. But their price point is about, what, $5, $6 for a subscription to this? And from what...
Yeah, the first month you can get for free. And then, yeah, I've seen different prices. I mean, when Ed Nordholm did the interview with the Wrestling Observer site last week, it was listed at $7.99 a month for the paid tier. And I'm with you. Like, I get a number of these services for MMA and pro wrestling, and 90% of the content I watch, it's live events that are happening now. Mm-hmm. It's not going back and watching archived footage. Like, I have no time for just leisurely watching old pro wrestling or old MMA. It's Fight Pass. I'm watching the current Fight Pass cards. If it's the WWE Network, it's the pay-per-views. It's 205 Live. It's NXT. If it's New Japan World, it's for the current New Japan shows that I just don't know how many people are out there that are just going to sign up for a network that is archive footage, regardless of promotion. I would say even if you can get the Noahs of the world on board and AAA, there's some great content, but the biggest commodity for your audience is their time. They don't have a ton of it to spread out over all these products that are out there today just with new stuff.
You have to I mean, listen, it's also this weird thing of the old Vince McMahon rule of, you know, you promote your product, not someone else's. So now they're in this weird area where they're how much of their resources, their time, their money, their TV, they're going to dedicate to talking up Noah or AAA. And then with AAA, you also fall into this weirdness over the rights, because Lucha Underground has a blanket deal for the rights for all the talent except for in Mexico. So that's a slippery one. How's that going to work? And, I mean, you could – what was the deal with John Morrison, a.k.a. Johnny Impact, a.k.a. Johnny Mundo, John Hennigan, Johnny Nitro, showing up on Global Force Wrestling in a limited capacity over the next few tapings? So there's a lot of question marks. I'm curious about the Lucha Underground consequences to the streaming deal, but also their talent working elsewhere. It's a challenging time for Lucha Underground, obviously, with the show going dark over a year ago, and no plans announced or in the works, from what I've been told. So we'll see what happens with Lucha Underground. One thing about Global Force we should mention is that they acknowledged, I guess, I don't know what John Gaberk's role is now. Is he the head of wrestling operations, talent relations, something brand management.
He's part of the creative team. I don't know what the exact title is, with Sanjay Dutt, with Scott D'Amore. And then earlier this week on their conference call, mentioning that Dutch Mantel will be in on all those creative meetings as well. So he would be part of that team as well.
Dutch is a I was concerned that Dutch was missing in action. I'm glad that he's still has a presence there, because he's got a sharp mind. They talked on that call, I believe, about a match that they had slotted originally for Bound for Glory, being Alberto, who is returning, as they also revealed, against Rey Mysterio. Ultimately, Rey Mysterio did not come to terms on a deal. He remains a free agent. Given WWE's, I guess, reported position on passing, what's next for Mysterio? What do you think happens with this guy who's... He's got a lot to offer. He is, as time goes on, I mean, physically getting more and more probably limited. He can probably do great six-man matches or trios matches, but what is his future hold?
I think it's a great question. I think he's still one of those attractions that a lot of promotions that will bring him in for a date or two, he can certainly capitalize with those. But in terms of like a full-time promotion, I mean, the options are somewhat limiting if you're taking the WWE and Global Force out of the picture. I mean, yes, he can do crash dates. Lucha Underground is a gigantic question mark if they will ever do any more tapings. So it really limits the field in terms of Ray, if he was looking for one permanent home and then kind of have your satellite bookings based around your dates with one home promotion. That the obvious answer doesn't really come to mind. I don't know what kind of a fit he would be for, say, a Ring of Honor, if they would be looking at bringing in Ray. I mean, I guess that becomes your next viable option if you're looking at the U.S. landscape.
Well, you also got to remember, New Japan still has designs in 2018 on some sort of representation in the United States, maybe just on the West Coast, maybe beyond that. Having Rey Mysterio, who lives on the West Coast, part of that would be it's an option for sure. He hasn't really done much with New Japan, I think, since WCW had a relationship with them, and I don't even know really what that entailed. But because of his affiliation with AAA over the last few years, there's this embargo on all non-CMLL talent appearing on New Japan shows, and they're very much aligned, New Japan is, with Paco Alonso and CMLL, so that keeps him off the grid. So I don't know where Ray goes. New Japan, maybe, yeah, Ring of Honor is another good choice. But also the number one thing is, what's he asking for? We don't know really why the deal didn't happen, and if it was a matter of money or dates or what. But you know, for Global Force to have gotten a Rey Mysterio, I think it would have brought in some people to check it out. There's some great matchups they could have done as well, fresh matchups. I think it's interesting they were going to book Alberto versus Mysterio. I'm really interested to see what they do with Alberto for the rest of 2017 and where he's at as his contract. I think he has maybe a one-year contract with them that comes up next year. He's been quiet, at least recently, I think. Maybe.
Well, which has probably been smart to just keep a low profile during this whole time.
Yeah. I think actually he did announce with a press release he was suing Full, which is a Lucha Libre company down in Mexico, for I guess they owe him about $66,000. So, but still relatively quiet for Alberto.
It's also interesting to see if Ray's next deal, how much he takes into account, you know, an avenue for Dominic, who's looking to break in, did an angle with Lucha Underground to set up the Johnny Mundo match that aired a couple of weeks back, that if he's looking at something where Dominic can kind of get his career going as well.
Yeah, and that's – it's also – I mean, Dominic, he's a great athlete. He really – he's played high school sports. He played a bit in college. He's got good size. He's somewhat bigger than Ray. I mean, he really is. Don't think of another Ray Mysterio. He's got a different body frame, everything. He's much taller. He's got to be, I'd say, maybe north of 5'10". But I'm looking at this weekend, CMLL, we're talking Lucha Libre, they're turning 84. I don't know if they're going to have a cake out there at Arena Mexico, but they have their big show of the year their 84th anniversary show coming up. Not like some really buzzy matches going into that one, but I think they're going to still do pretty good business for the Anniversario show.
Yeah, it's got Niebla Roja and Gran Guerrero in a mask versus mask match. Certainly with Atlantis being injured, I mean, he's kind of been a focal point of a number of the big anniversary shows. And these have always been fun shows to watch just because of the crowd heat and, you know, some of the main events of the last few years that have just been incredibly emotional matches as well with various unmaskings, and to see kind of how this year's, I mean, I'm not following CMLL every week with the Friday night shows, but to see how this one, especially how it draws this year without, say, an Atlantis, for instance, or, you know, Ultimo Guerrero's positioned here in a six-man with Satoshi Kojima and Mephisto taking on Volador Jr., Flip Gordon, and Caristico. Sounds like a very fun match on paper, but certainly not something where, you know, like Guerrero having his mask on the line, for instance, the prominence of Ultimo Guerrero on this show compared to prior.
And I think that, you know, you look at the 85th anniversary coming up next fall, they're going to wait for something big for that one, big and splashy. And I think that's what we're going to see next year. But I still think they're going to do good business this weekend in Arena Mexico. And you can stream that. I don't know how. I don't remember. I'll jump on Twitter and you'll find a way to stream it legally, actually. And they watching an Arena Mexico show is a fun experience. It's a throwback in a lot of ways. It's a fun experience. And if you're going to check out an Arena Mexico show, go out of your way this weekend to check it out. I think you'll enjoy it's a different product and you'll enjoy it. Jumping around, you know, the world here as we talk about Mexico. In Germany, they lost a major player once upon a time, a major player in German wrestling, but also a face that we saw pop up in the AWA, among other places, with the passing of Otto Wanz.
Yeah, I mean, this was a guy that you instantly link with Austria, of course, with the Catch Wrestling Association. I mean, that was the name that you associated with. And I'm sure, like, a very significant figure in Austria, just looking at kind of the coverage it received over there with his passing at 74 years of age. I mean, this was a guy that, yeah, as you mentioned, he had a quick cup of coffee with the AWA title, kind of just in between Nick Bockwinkel reigns, that he beat him for the title, dropped it right back to him, but gave him a lot of credibility back home with that AWA title run. Was part of the first IWGP tournament that he ended up forfeiting most of the matches because of an injury, but did work with Kinect in that first tournament. So had his time with New Japan, worked with Don Leo Jonathan throughout his career as well. Worked with a very young Leon White, the future Vader as well. Just a gigantic kind of monster powerhouse worker. I mean, this was hardly the most skilled guy in the ring, I think that's fair to say. But in terms of that part of the world, and also the guys he brought over there to Catch that just raved about working over there, I mean, that's kind of the memories you have of Otto Wanz.
And he was a heavy, heavy guy. He was probably about 6'2", 6'3", but pushing about 400 pounds. So, you know, he was the classic old school super heavyweight that you don't really see in wrestling nowadays. You don't see that kind of guy. And if you do, it's more of a ha-ha thing, not a guy positioned by top companies to challenge for the title or be a champion like he was in the AWA. But he was a perennial top star and crossing over doing some TV out in Germany and into Europe. And if you look him up, I mean, you'll see a lot of pictures with Otto Wanz and Hulk Hogan early on in Hulk's career. You know, I understand he was a huge dude even in later years. He never dropped the weight. But definitely a guy I remember getting the old pro wrestling, these books that, like, they had like bios. I think, I don't know if Bill Apter did them, but they weren't magazines, they were books, and they had like wrestlers from around the world, and you see their finisher. Everyone's hobby was like fishing or hunting. Everyone in there, and I'm like, they just didn't have anything for this guy, and they're just saying that they're into fishing and hunting. But that was when I first became familiar with Otto Wanz. He was in one of those books as this big presence from Germany, and I remember seeing a picture of him where he's like doing like feats of strength with the phone books and stuff, just old territory spots to build him up. And you know, interesting dude that I'm sure a lot of people will be covering in the days to come here, but a significant figure back in the day when Germany had catch wrestling. I remember seeing it in the PWI results, always catch wrestling, their top ranked guys. And Otto Wanz was, of course, as a promoter, one of their top ranked guys always. But sorry to hear he passed away yesterday.
We've also got New Japan has their destruction card on Saturday in Hiroshima with Hiroshi Tanahashi and Zack Sabre Jr. for the Intercontinental title, Kushida against El Desperado for the junior heavyweight title, and then a rematch of last week's tag title match with War Machine, the Guerrillas of Destiny, and the Killer Elite Squad, and the final match involving Rocky Romero and Trent Barretta, who will have their farewell match as a team against Chase Owens and Yujiro, part of this card. They had a pretty dismal show last weekend in Fukushima that was pretty much panned by everybody, and I'm not going to disagree. I thought it was a pretty lackluster show overall. So I'm optimistic about this card being a turnaround, because it's very rare you get a relatively big card from New Japan that disappoints to the level last weekend's did. Not to say Destruction are your biggest cards of the year, but they're the notable shows of the tour. And we've got three of them with one down and two to go here with the Kobe card next weekend with the return of Kenny Omega. But Tanahashi, Zack Sabre Jr., that's a rematch from the G1 set up with Zack's submission over Tanahashi. And I think that Kushida and El Desperado could be a really interesting match as well. I think that these two have some very good chemistry together, and Desperado, you can't say that too often with guys in a singles capacity.
No, not at all. I think there's going to be some good matches there. Another company that's kind of coming back a bit, and I've been watching a little bit of their stuff, is All Japan Pro Wrestling. People think about Noah and how, you know, that's really a top company, maybe, but I mean, if you watch a show, you'll see how many people are at recent Noah shows. If you watch All Japan and you look at those crowds, they're starting to come back. They really are. And I've been impressed by some of the work I've seen from All Japan. They have good talent. It would be great to see All Japan come back. I'm pulling for them. I used to have a MLW back. They had an affiliation with them, so I guess maybe I'm biased towards them. But it's a company that never really went away. You know, they really got small for a while, but they've been around since the early 70s. So to see them rallying back in some capacity, I hope continues. And you can catch some of their stuff, I think, on gaora.co.jp, gaora.co.jp/wrestling. You'll see other companies there, Mudo's and Oz Academy and Dragon Gate stuff. And you can, I think, somehow subscribe to a streaming service for their product too. But check out some of their free stuff. It's really fun. New Japan's great, but there's other stuff out there too, and a lot of fun to be had, not just with New Japan. So if they had a slow week, treat yourself to something different from Japan.
Yeah, and some of their stuff is also popping up on the Fight app as well, FITE app, mm-hmm. As well, that you can watch. And if I'm not mistaken, I was checking some of it out recently, and they've got like a show up there from last month it's free. Like, you don't even have to pay for it to watch with I'm just pulling it up here with Kento Miyahara against the Bodyguard. Yeah, All Japan has, I think, seen a bit of an upswing in attendance this year, mm-hmm. and showing some life, which is a good sign over there, where it's been so it's been very difficult to be able to draw over there if you're not New Japan or DDT and Dragon Gate. I mean, those have kind of been your promotions that have soared over the last number of years, but it's been a tough go of things for your All Japans and Noahs. I mean, there's such a fracturing of promotions over there that it's good to see All Japan with a bit of momentum.
Yeah,
state things,
but definitely not. But again, their crowds, maybe 1,000, something like that. I mean, that doesn't sound like a lot, but you see where they were about a year or two ago. They've come back. Maybe it's a little, you know, maybe that my time's off there a little bit. But Noah's just a few hundred, you know, very small crowds, and I want to see them do well too. But I would just be it for. Listen, there was a time when there was a diehard fans were into New Japan, and diehard fans were into All Japan. Some fans were into everything, but there was like a rivalry between the two groups and the fans that followed them, and what was the better style. And I'd love for All Japan to continue. They have new ownership with some somewhat deep pockets, so to see them have the patience to build this thing back up, similar to what happened with New Japan when Bushiroad took it over, if they can get it done, that'd be great. It's more opportunities for fans and talent. So that's my, I guess, go out and check it out this week plug. What's going on this weekend over on Live Audio Wrestling?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Sunday night on The Law, we will be joined by Colt Cabana. He's going to chat about the latest involving the lawsuit that was filed against himself and CM Punk. He's also going to be chatting about ROH's pay-per-view next weekend that he's going to be calling, along with Ian Riccaboni and his work as a commentator over the last number of months throughout 2017. So that's coming up, along with Dave Meltzer on the show. You can catch that at midnight Eastern. And then all of our shows are up at liveaudiowrestling.com. A new Keep It 2000 is up with Brian Mann and Nate Milton, where they go through all of the Nitros from 2000. And they are going through the May 15th, 2000 edition of Nitro, which, if you recall, Court, I know you remember that date. It was when Vince Russo and David Flair were doing their segments together, going to Flair's home. And I thought they were some of the best vignettes that WCW did that year, involving Vince Russo and David Flair, where David was under the spell, I guess, of Vince Russo and feuding with his father. It was one of the few bright spots, I thought, of WCW programming in 2000.
Bro, I might just have to check that out.
How about in MLW land? How are things looking for your big one-shot show coming up next month? And were there any issues with the show given the recent events with Hurricane Irma?
No. We were very lucky. The venue is in great shape. Nothing happened to the venue. Some of our wrestlers lost their power for extended periods of time. In fact, one of them just got it back yesterday, so they're still on the rebound. But in general, you know, they did okay. But it depends where you are in Florida. I had friends that just miles away from Orlando had half their roof shredded. So it just depends where you were. And I've had friends in Miami and friends in West Palm that just are getting their power back now. So it's hard times down there, and hopefully this is the end of the hurricane season hitting them. It's you know, after some quiet time down there with a few years with nothing, we see Houston, we see Florida hit pretty hard this year. So hopefully that's the end of it. You know, I'm crossing my fingers for everyone. But awkward way to segue into telling people about a wrestling show. But to close out the show today, yeah, if you haven't gotten your tickets to MLW One Shot, it's Thursday, October 5th at Gilt Nightclub in Orlando. And we're tracking to sell out. And I sense that that's going to happen. So you don't want to sleep on this. Get your tickets now at MLW.com. Advanced tickets start at just $15. We have, of course, Ricochet versus Strickland. We've been doing a pretty different type of countdown special, kind of like UFC Embedded, tracking their journey going into their main event each and every week. You can check that out at youtube.com/Major League Wrestling. It's about
starring Court Bauer's tweets.
Well, that wasn't one, very briefly, but it's a really you'll see interesting cameos. Next week, I think we'll have a certain Global Force wrestler pop up in Chapter 5. But it's been a cool journey doing that, cool different experiment. Definitely check it out. Also on the show, we got MVP versus Sami Callihan, Filthy Tom Lawler versus Jeff Cobb. It's the battle of the UFC fighter versus a 2004 Olympian and Jeff Cobb. And then we have Santana Garrett, fresh off of the Mae Young Classic. We'll be announcing her match probably this coming week, early this week. Maxwell Jacob Friedman, a.k.a. MJF, who was trained by Curt Hawkins, is a great 21-year-old big mouth New Yorker who's having a breakout year. He'll be there. Jason Cade, a protege of Ricochet and Sami Callihan, will also be there. We're announcing more talent pretty much now around the clock at MLW.com. And, of course, if you can't be there, you can stream or download the show on a delay, VOD style, within 72 hours at MLW.tv. We'll have the former Rich Brennan Rich Bucchini, joined by Tony Schiavone, returning to call pro wrestling for the first time since WCW and the XWF at MLW One Shot. And he'll be Tony will be in the house that night calling it live to tape, as they say. So he'll be down in Orlando with Rich calling it, and then we'll have that out for you guys to check out and stream and download for about $5 within 72 hours at MLW.TV. So
you're not going to put Ricochet and Shane Strickland in the ring with like 4 minutes to go in the broadcast, and then you got to go.
The beauty is with VOD and streaming, there's no limit. We can go for 30 hours. We won't, but we're going to try to go for 3 hours. I think that's a good sweet spot, but we might still be out of time. I hope that somehow we can fit that into it. It's great to work with Tony. I think Tony's really enjoyed getting back in the groove. He's been preparing for the show, and I think it's been a really cool year for Tony in general to come back to something he always loved but left in such a weird place, to do the podcast, to see people actually wanted to hear his stories. I think it's been really cool. I think it's been cool for him and his fans. So to kind of maybe come full circle and now have him finally return to the broadcast booth, that's a pretty cool 10-month run for him here. So looking forward to it.
Your next goal is to get Todd Pettengill to come back and do wrestling.
Wow, comparing Todd Pettengill to Tony Schiavone.
I'm not comparing the two, I'm just saying.
Tony's about to text you and call you a slapdick for that one.
Wow, unbelievable. Well, we're looking forward to that. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll be back soon, I'm sure, with the new Bauer and Pollock. But in the meantime, check him out. What's your Twitter? I am John Pollock.
You know it.
And I'm at Court Bauer on Twitter. And feel better, John. Hope Wade doesn't get you sick anymore.
All right. I would cough, but I know everyone would just be disgusted by that. So we will chat with you all the next time the Bauer signal goes up in the air.
God, I can only imagine that logo.